This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump launched new attacks Sunday on this week's impeachment hearings that target him, calling them disgraceful and complaining that Democrats are blocking witnesses that Republicans want to question. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
The impeachment inquiry shifts from closed to public hearings this week with the first session on Wednesday. The move comes after weeks of Republican accusations of Democrats working in secret.
If this was out open and transparent, then the American public could see exactly what's going on. That's all we're wanting, is we want this to be transparent.
Republicans have continued to defend the president, even those who believe his conduct wasn't appropriate. Democrats disagree.
He went on a telephone call with the president of Ukraine and then proceeded to ask for an investigation of his rival. And this is a very strong case of bribery.
At the heart of the inquiry is a July 25th phone call between Trump and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
A front runner in Afghanistan's recently held presidential election called Sunday for immediately halting a recount of the vote, casting aspersions on the integrity and legitimacy of the already delayed electoral process. Afghan Chief Executive Abdullah Abdullah made the demand a day after unilaterally withdrawing his name and his team's election observers from the recounting process ahead of Thursday's scheduled announcement of the preliminary results from the September 28th polls. The country's Independent Election Commission was due to release first results on October 19th, but failed to meet the deadline, citing capacity issues and efforts aimed at ensuring transparency of the process. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Voters in Spain cast their ballots Sunday in the country's fourth election in 4 years. Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez's Socialist Party is expected to be the big winner. In the previous election, however, the Spanish leader's party failed to win enough votes to form a stable government. Hong Kong media report that people and police there fired upon and wounded at least one protester Monday as chaos erupted across the city a day after officers fired tear gas to break up demonstrations that are now entering their sixth month. Police fired live rounds at protesters on the eastern side of Hong Kong Island. Video footage showed a protester lying in a pool of blood with his eyes wide open. Police also pepper sprayed and subdued a woman nearby as plastic crates were thrown at officers. Police declined to comment when contacted by Reuters. The last violence comes after a student died in hospital last week following a high fall as protesters were being dispersed by police. Bolivian President Evo Morales announced his resignation after weeks of protests, Reuters' Chris Dignam explains.
Morales, who came to power in 2006 as Bolivia's first indigenous leader, said in televised comments that he would submit his resignation letter to help restore stability, though he aimed barbs at what he called a civic coup. The head of Bolivia's armed forces said on Sunday that the military had asked Morales to step down after weeks of widespread protests over last month's presidential election, which escalated over the weekend, as police forces were seen joining anti-government protests, and the military said it would not, quote, confront the people over the issue. Earlier on Sunday, Morales tried to placate critics at a news conference, saying he had agreed to hold new elections and would replace the country's electoral body. But that didn't satisfy his opponents, who said the international audit clearly demonstrated election fraud.
That is Reuters' Chris Dignam reporting. And thousands of people marched in France and other cities against Islamophobia.
Muslims joining the march through the rainy streets of the capital say they have had enough. A recent IFOP poll finds 4 in 10 French Muslims believe they are discriminated against because of their religion. Another survey finds more than 60% of respondents consider Islam incompatible with French values. While anti-Islamic attacks are not new, several recent events help catalyze this protest.
That is VOA's Lisa Bryant reporting. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, November 11th. And here are some of the stories we're covering. IGAD endorses South Sudan's 100-day delay in forming a transitional government.
We want full implementation of the security arrangement, and we need political will on the part of our peace partner now, as we have been demonstrating as a party.
Pope Francis is to visit South Sudan in 2020. Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo to improve infrastructure to ease business. And Ogonis in the United States commemorate the 24th anniversary of Ken Sarawiwa's death.
The first thing is to ensure that we continue to make the world understand that the situation that led to Ken Sarawiwa's death hasn't changed in Nigeria.
Anselm Jaumelo is a member of the Council of Ogoni Professionals and the story of two sisters in Kenya who eat soap. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Council of Ministers of the Regional Group Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, on Sunday endorsed the 100-day delay in the formation of South Sudan's transitional government of national unity. The delay will begin November 12 and end February 22, 2020. South Sudan President Salva Kiir and opposition SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar reached the agreement last week in Entebbe, Uganda. President Kiir said Sunday that he accepted the 100-day delay to avoid another war in South Sudan. Stephen Parkour, the SPLM-IO Secretary for Foreign Affairs, says the SPLM-IO only wants the revised peace agreement implemented, particularly the transitional security arrangement.
We want full implementation of the security arrangement, and we need political will on the part of our peace partner now, as we have been demonstrating as a party, to make sure that this transitional security arrangement is implemented and the number of states is determined and the boundary demarcated.
President Salva Kiir came out Sunday to say that he accepted the 100 days extension to avoid war in South Sudan. People had said that your leader or the SPLA-IO had threatened to go to war if you did not get your way.
That is not true. The people of South Sudan are sick of war. And the SPLA-IO is not in the position to take the people of South Sudan back to war. Our chairman was misquoted when he said the ceasefire could eventually collapse if we don't merge the forces, which is true. You cannot keep the forces separate. You know, what brought crisis back in 2016 was because we had two separate armies in the same capitals. We conceded this demand to the government during our negotiation when the government demanded one army under one command during the transitional period. We are doing exactly that. We want the merger of forces to avoid tensions between two armies, and our country needs one army under one command. And that is the command by the President of the Republic. We did not say this to return the country to war. We just want the agreement, particularly the transitional security arrangement, to be implemented to avoid more crisis.
Now, following the meeting, your side, Dr. Riek Machar, and the Juba government, President Salva Kiir, they promised that they will work in the common interest of the people of South Sudan. We have followed the conflict in South Sudan. And let me say that I think the people of South Sudan have been disappointed on many occasions. What can you say now that can reassure the people of South Sudan that this time around, both sides are going to live by what they say they will do?
It is true that our people have been disappointed so many times. And we, the parties, need to take that seriously. As for the political will, I cannot speak for the will of the other parties. I can tell you that we are now in Juba to make sure that this agreement is implemented. We have made progress by identifying cantonment sites. We have moved our forces to the cantonment site. Some registration has been done, and our security mechanism representatives are working with our peace partner in Juba and beyond. The SPLM-SPLA-IO has demonstrated a tremendous will to make sure that this agreement is implemented in letter and spirit.
Thank you for speaking with us.
Nice talking to you, sir.
Stephen Parkuol is the SPLMIO Secretary for Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Pope Francis urged the faithful on Sunday to pray for unity in South Sudan and said he hoped to visit the country in 2020.
Pope Francis has long been concerned about the political situation in South Sudan and had a special thought for the nation during his greeting to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square on Sunday. He recalled the spiritual retreat of South Sudanese leaders in the Vatican earlier this year and made his appeal.
Desidero rinnovare il mio invito.
The Pope urged all the actors of the national political process to seek unity and to overcome their differences in a spirit of true brotherhood. Francis added that the South Sudanese people have suffered too much in recent years and await with great hope a better future, the definitive end of conflicts and a lasting peace. He called on the country's leaders to continue tirelessly with their commitment to an inclusive dialogue in the search for an agreement for the good of the nation. Pope Francis also expressed the hope that the international community would not neglect South Sudan as it moves on the path to national reconciliation. 2 years after South Sudan gained its independence, in 2013, civil war erupted in the country with President Salva Kiir accusing his deputy, Riek Machar, of orchestrating a coup against him. The two leaders, who both came to the Vatican in April, have committed to forming a unity government. The Pope, who traveled this year to the African nations of Mozambique, Madagascar, and Mauritius, told the faithful he hoped to travel to South Sudan next year. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo have signed agreements to work on key road networks connecting the two countries to ease business. However, security concerns along the routes remain key for business. Halima Athumani reports from Entebbe, Uganda.
Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo have signed an agreement to increase trade and investment between the two Great Lakes region countries. President Yoweri Museveni of Uganda and President Felix Tshisekedi of the DRC noted that there are numerous trade restricting measures and infrastructure obstacles that raise the cost of doing business in the region. Museveni noted that both Uganda and the DRC now import many products from China, Japan, and India instead of manufacturing them at home. The total distance of the three key road networks will be 1,182 kilometers within 24 months after the respective ministers have agreed on implementation details.
One road we want to work on is from Gori to Mahagi Bunya. Then the other road would be from Mpondwe to Beni. The other road would be from Bunagana to Rutshuru to Goma. So when you produce, you supply goods, you supply services, but you also create jobs for the youth.
There have been expressions of fear among businessmen about the militias operating in the eastern DRC that may destabilize trade between the two countries. However, Tshisekedi reassured them that the two countries will ensure there is peace to promote business and development. We intend to develop or build infrastructure so we can carry out economic activity to lead to economic growth for the benefit of our people. Because, as you know, in the absence of development, poverty sets in and becomes a vector of instability. Trade this year between Uganda and the DRC through May 18th is over $532 million, with Congo only exporting $30 million in goods to Uganda. Evelyn Anite, Uganda's State Minister for Investment, says the launch of the business forum and signing of the agreements will open a DRC market of $80 million for Ugandan businesses just, and a Ugandan market of $40 million for the DRC.
What are these things? Cement, scholastic material, building materials. We have a company in this country that manufactures 10,000 blankets in a month, but only 3,000 gets consumed in the country because the population size is small. So there's a lot of natural resources that the Congolese have. They do have gold. They have palm oil. So if they can process that and then bring it to our country, that trade imbalance over time is going to improve.
Both countries continue to face the brunt of militia movements, especially in the eastern part of the DRC, that has seen thousands killed and thousands more cross into Uganda as refugees. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Entebbe, Uganda.
Today is Monday, November 11th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The leader of Gambia's Moro Party says it is impossible for elections to be held in 2019 as originally planned by the coalition government led by President Adamman Barrow. Mai Ahmed Fati was speaking to journalists on Sunday upon his return from an overseas trip to meet with his supporters in Europe. Pandero Mbaye reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
As political tensions are mounting ahead of the expiration of the three-year transitional rule, opinions are divided over President Adama Barrow's tenure in office. This past week, former Gambian vice president and leader of the United Democratic Party, Usenu Dabo, said Barrow should respect the three-year transitional rule, but the GMC leader, Mai Fati, had a different view on the matter.
For GMC, we had made it very clear. For us to have election in 2019 is not realistic. Why is it not realistic? One, we have the same constitution that Germany left with us, and this constitution is heavily skewed in favor of the incumbents. Simple majority are gone through, and it is now the prevailing trend across the world, developed world, and in developing countries, is to have absolute majority, 51% plus. Now, the current constitution does not cater for that.
Fati had recently resigned from Barrow's government. He was a special advisor to the president. He was also the head of the newly created unit at the president's office, the Strategic Unit on Policy and Good Governance.
It is essential that we reform the laws. First and foremost, we reform the laws, have a new constitution, and under the new constitution, we can have elections. Secondly, we need to change the electoral laws and the system of registration. There are too many distortions in our election laws. And unless we sanitize the election laws, we will have something similar to what we had with Germany.
The Barrow government has established a constitutional review commission. Its chairman is Justice Chorno Suleiman Jallo. Jallo said in a recent statement that the first draft of the proposed constitution would be published soon, though no date was given for the published date. Fati warns that in the absence of a new constitution, the opposition should forget about defeating Barrow in future elections.
Current political laws support only President Barrow because they favored only Yahya Jammeh at the time. If we want to institute democracy in our country, we must change those laws.
Frederick Tendeng is a Gambian political analyst. Tendeng notes that due to power struggle among the leaders of the coalition government, elections could not be held as planned.
If they had worked hard during their coming from January 2017 until now, probably we might be able to hold elections. Unfortunately, they didn't do that. So these people were there entrenching their position.
Tendeng says the transitional government has virtually failed. He blames President Barrow for the current failures.
We have a president who has no vision, who politically knows. He actually only think about how to get a second term.
The GMC leader, Mai Fati, also raised the issue of cross-border migration in his press conference. He says there are over 20,000 Gambian refugees in Germany, many of whom had no jobs. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Members of the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People, MOSAP, of Nigeria in the United States say they will not rest until the work of Ken Saro-Wiwa is complete. Saro-Wiwa, a human rights activist and an environmentalist, was hanged November 10, 1995, along with eight others because of their fight against the destruction of Ogoni land from leaking oil pipelines owned by Shell Oil. On the 24th anniversary of the death of the Ogoni Nine, MOSAP USA members gathered Sunday in St. Louis, Missouri, and have vowed to carry on the fight. Anslam John Miller is a member of the Council of Ogoni Professionals.
The first thing is to ensure that we continue to make the world understand that the situation that led to Ken Saro-Wiwa's death hasn't changed in Nigeria, because the oil companies yet to actually address the problems of the Ogoni people as enshrined in the Ogoni Bill of Rights, in the OBR.
So when you said to keep Ken Saro-Wiwa's dream alive, are you people making headways with the oil companies in the Ogoni land?
First of all, Shell remains persona non grata in Ogoni land because the company is yet to apologize to the Ogoni people for the atrocities committed that led to the death of Saro-Wiwa and other leaders of Ogoni people. Number two, I will also say that something positive has happened in the UNEP report, which is the fact that the Nigerian government and Shell has admitted through the United Nations Environmental Programme assessment of Ogoni that the atrocities committed in Ogoni were actually devastating, and it was carried out by Shell. That is why I am using the same opportunity to call on Shell to do the right thing by ensuring that the ongoing cleanup exercise is done in accordance with the UNEP report. There should be no shortcuts. There should be no politicization of the cleanup. The cleanup should be done with the mindset that the people have been through a lot, and as such, this is an opportunity to make amends, to make the people happy. The idea that anyone will tie the cleanup to oil exploration is totally unacceptable to the Ogoni people, and we are going to resist it nonviolently.
Has there been any change with the current government in Nigeria in terms of the situation in Ogoni land?
I will say it is mixed. First of all, the government has demonstrated that they have a little political will to address the Ogoni problem by authorizing HIPREP, constituting the body, giving funds to HIPREP to also carry out the cleanup. But where the political will is not fully in place is the fact that you have a committee, a board of trustees, and also the HIPREP governing council, and there are allegations, grave allegations of embezzlement and misappropriation of funds, and the government is quiet. It surprises me that a government that prides itself in integrity and zero tolerance for corruption will not say anything about the genuine concerns of the people about the fact that the current leadership of the HIPREP, which is the Hydrocarbon Restoration Control Agency, has not done anything in regards to ensuring that those prerequisites that the United Nations identified in the report are taken care of.
Anselm John Miller is a member of the Council of Ogoni Professionals. He was speaking with us from St. Louis, Missouri. Two sisters from Kenya's Nandi County have been eating soap since they were little. 24-year-old Sharon Chepchurch told VOA she started eating soap at the age of five. Her 17-year-old sister also eats soap. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, nutritionists say soap eating may be hazardous to the two sisters if they do not seek medical attention.
Sometimes I feel pain on my kidneys, sometimes my heart.
Sharon Chepchirchir, a mother of one from Kibochi village in Nandi County, says she started feeding on soap, a craving that she has been having for the last 19 years. She says a few years ago, she also discovered that her sister, a 17-year-old, also eats soap despite of them living apart. Chepchirchir says she has tried to let go of the pica without success, as the doctor's advice, she should undergo tests to ascertain the deficiency in their bodies.
I started using the soap when I was 5 years old. When I was 18 years, I got pregnant. So I went to see the doctor if the soap will affect the baby. The doctor told me that it has no any effect.
The duo have never had any stomach upset. Neither have they had health problems. Chepchirchir narrates that her appetite for soap is unstoppable, and that by chance she fails to get a bar soap, she looks for powdered soap to quench her thirst. Her sister Lydia Chepkemboi chips in with the soap in case she has none left. The doctor who attended to me when I was pregnant was so shocked that I was eating soap. The craving is so strong that I have to eat soap for it to disappear. If I don't get the bar soaps, I look for powdered soaps. Provided I get the foam from the soap, then I feel satisfied. Pauline Akoth, a nutritionist, says that a low level of nutrients in the body may cause a person to be attracted to an unnutritive element in order to quench the craving. She says since it's affecting blood sisters, chances are high the mother lacked some nutrients while she was pregnant.
So naturally, when someone has a deficiency, for example, in sodium or potassium, they'll tend to focus on other sources that may not necessarily be of nutritive value. When a mother is expecting a child and they have like a deficiency in some minerals, they can pass on to the kids and all that can be corrected, but should be noted earlier.
A Another nutritionist, Zipporah Mwangi, however, says soap eating can cause organ failures in the body and that the two should seek medical attention.
Eating non-food stuff can as well be very health hazard and it can affect vital organs.
According to the Illinois Poison Center, soap may cause irritation to the stomach or intestines if swallowed. However, hand and body soaps are minimally toxic in very small quantities. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Cairo, where host Egypt kicked off their under-23 African Cup of Nations campaign with a 1-0 win against Mali in Group A at the Cairo International Stadium in Cairo. In the group's other game, Cameroon drew 1-1 with Ghana at the same venue. Defending champions Nigeria got off the worst possible start after a 1-0 loss to Ivory Coast in their Group B encounter on Saturday, in which they were reduced to 10 men. And staying with the AFCON Under-23 tournament, history was made on Saturday when a female referee took charge of the game at the Under-23 African Cup of Nations for the first time in the tournament's history, as South Africa and Zambia drew 0-0 at the Al Salam Stadium in Egypt. Rwanda's Salma Mukasanga officiated the match and was assisted by Morocco's Fatia Jeremouni. CAF President Ahmed Ahmed praised the duo for their professional handling of the game after the match. Away from the AFCON Under-23 tournament, the draw for the group phase of the Total CAF Confederations Cup 2019-2020 season will take place on Tuesday at the CAF headquarters in Cairo, Egypt. The 16 teams that qualified will be divided into four groups of four teams each for the group phase of the second-tier club championship. The teams are Al Masry of Egypt, Hussa Eras Bakani of Morocco, Enyimba International and Rangers International, both from Nigeria, Parado of Algeria, ESAE of Benin, San Pedro of Cote d'Ivoire, Mutema Pembe of DR Congo, Horuya from Guinea, Al Nasser of Libya, Joliba of Mali, Nadiobu of Mauritania, Bidvitzvitz of South Africa, and Zanaco of Zambia. Away from football news now, the Kenyan skating team finished third as the inaugural African Roller Games concluded in Kinshasa on Sunday. The four-man team won the total of 13 medals, 5 gold, 4 silver, and 4 bronze medals during the 8-day championship, a result that was bettered by Benin and host the Democratic Republic of Congo. Benin won 22 gold, 15 silver, and 12 bronze medals for a whooping haul of 49 medals. The DRC came second with 39 medals, 7 gold, 15 silver, and 17 bronze medals. In basketball news, it was an Egyptian double on Sunday after Egypt dominated the third edition of the FIBA 3x3 African Cup in Kampala, Uganda. In the men's category, Egypt defeated the Democratic Republic of Congo in the final 21-12 to win their first ever FIBA 3x3 African Cup title. In the women's category, Egypt again defeated the two-time winners Mali 18-15 in the championships game. It was Mali's only second loss in 3x3 African Cup history in 16 games in the women's category. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, November 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day. I'm a sucker
for us. Hi, I'm Larry London. Don't miss your chance to get the Now 71 CD, including some of the top hit songs of today's biggest stars.
I can't write one song that's not about you. Can't drink.
The CD features Billie Eilish as Bad Guy.
So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy, just always so puff guy. I'm that bad type, make your mama sad type. Make your girlfriend mad type.
Lil Nas X, Old Town Road.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. I'm gonna
the greatest hits. You can only get the chance to win by listening to Border Crossings. Tune us in every day at 1500 UTC.